Amigos, nachos, amigos, and welcome to Record Breakers, a music podcast of good times and good tidings, friends and frivolity. We're a bunch of friends gathered together to talk about music, share an album with each other, an album at a time, one at a time. Like a little book club for music. It's super fun. I'm Peter Rave, your man with no plan. Here with me is my team, my squad, my crew. We've got Brett.
Star of Brett Hibbard Combat Basketball.
Yes. We've got Drew.
Hi.
And we've got David.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Record Breakers podcast. Petey, I just want to let you know you need to update the album cover.
Oh, yeah. I do need to do that.
Yes, that is a very important thing for this album.
Yes. While I do that, let's talk about it. We're talking about an album. We're talking about the provider of the album this week is Brett. Brett, what have you brought for us this week?
Oh, this is a difficult one to explain. I'll tell you what I brought. I brought the album as it was released, The Life of Chris Gaines, the greatest hits album from Chris Gaines, artist from fictitiously from Brisbane, Australia, but it's actually just Garth Brooks with a soul patch and a wig on doing what was branded at the time as alternative rock. Yes.
I forgot that it was, okay. It was alt rock.
This was considered.
I knew that it was supposed to be his rock alter ego, but I forgot that it was his alt rock alter ego. Okay.
And I also should note that I'm pretty sure that none of us have ever really dug into Chris Gaines before or knew that he existed. So I was shocked when I found out what genre this was actually. This is Garth Brooks, but singing differently.
Yeah. Drew, what were your expectations coming into this album?
So I knew that this was Chris Gaines was the rock and roll alter ego of one Garth Brooks. But that was pretty much all I knew. I knew there was a defunct movie that was supposed to come out off of the back of this. And this album was so poorly received.
It was so good they had to release it.
It was so good. It was so great
that it had to be released.
Couldn't live up to it.
And it had to be released from its mortal coil and never spoken of again.
I mean, look at that.
Until
look at that album cover. Take a look at that.
Yeah. Look at emo Garth Brooks. Look at it.
Yeah.
And the thunder rolls. He's got friends in low places.
Looking like the third member of Savage Garden. Look at that guy. Look at him.
This was supposed to be 90s alt rock.
Yeah. I mean, it was coming in at the end. So, like, they had plenty of examples to come from. But, sorry.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah. They had plenty of examples. This is what came out of it.
David, what were your expectations coming into this album?
I had successfully wiped Chris Gaines from my memory. Because I only have a vague memory of Chris Gaines' performance on Saturday Night Live, in which Garth Brooks was the host of that episode. Take that, Childish Gambino! But other than that, all I knew was that this was supposed to be Garth Brooks trying to do something different from his regular style, and it was not received very well. So I'm coming into this essentially blind, but I love Brett's album selections, so I come in with open ears and an open heart.
So, just some perspective. We talk about how it wasn't "quote unquote" received well, and well, it did go double platinum.
And platinum in Canada as well.
Platinum in Canada
charted at number two,
and it has two songs that are one song that the single that
it had Garth Brooks's Wikipedia entry. It had Garth Brooks's highest chart toppers, like on the Billboard Top 100. I'm not saying it didn't sell. It sold. People were interested.
Well, public were like mixed. It had some favorable reviews. Mojo gave it a favorable review. So there's
Pitchfork. What Pitchfork have to say about Mojo Chris Gaines?
It people were definitely interested. That's the word you can use. It was certainly interesting, PD Rave.
Hashtag interesting. Brett, how would you describe this album musically?
Well, like we said, this album did chart at number 2 in the U.S. and Canada, and it went platinum in Canada and double platinum in the States. So, like, this album is probably easiest for someone. Like, the other thing is this has almost been completely wiped from history. You can't find the music videos anywhere. You can't find the album just about anywhere. Like, if you look hard enough, you can find it.
It ain't on Spotify. Yeah. It ain't on Google Play. It ain't on Amazon.
Like, you can go to Daily Motion and you can't find the music videos. It's hard to find the set. Like, you can find the Saturday Night Live episode that he was on, because I remember the reruns and there are things about this album that are pretty strange, which I don't know if it was because this album is so entirely forgettable that it just didn't take off, or if Garth is paying somebody to wipe it from the internet, because this is nuts that, like, I'm pretty good at sleuthing.
And I was going to say, who knew Garth Brooks had that much power? But then, yeah, I would imagine Garth Brooks would have much power.
This album came out about 5 years before, like, the ability to wipe things from existence stopped being available to artists. Yeah.
If you think Garth Brooks is not that powerful, Garth Brooks created Stadium Country, like, one of the biggest, like, ridiculous forces in music right now. Stadium Country, it was Garth Brooks's fault.
And the reason the reason that this album sounds like a pop-ass pop album is because, hey, those country guys were all doing pop-ass pop music with a drawl and a hat.
Garth Brooks was a pop musician for years already. I would say, like, this album dares to ask the question, what if Garth Brooks was even more bland?
I mean, this album also, like, it's Garth Brooks trying to be an Australian guy, but anytime that his voice is at the normal range where he's actually singing for country music, you're hearing you're hearing Garth come out. Like, there's no, like, he's countrying his vowels up in a way that, like, so it's like if you ever wanted to hear, like, Garth Brooks trying to sing, you know, the guy whose vocals are I Got Friends in Low Places, which you've heard a million times at karaoke, like, this is not like a tour de force of vocals.
Have you been at my karaoke? Are you saying you've been in, have you been to my karaoke? Because you're speaking the truth. You're speaking too much of the truth. But yeah, Drew, how would you describe this album musically?
Uneventful is the best word I can use to describe this entire album. It sounds like a cookie cutter 90s pop rock album. Like, there's something about it that just felt bland from beginning to end to me.
Like it was contrived out of thin air.
Yeah, a little like they were trying real hard to do something with this, and it didn't work out. Garth Brooks, like I just said, was the dude that invented, like, your Toby Keiths and your Keith Urbans.
Oh, God.
A lot. To Garth
flashbacks
Brooks.
To basic training. Oh, God, not Toby Keith. Oh, God,
the asses will get boots put in them.
No, Brett, no. Please, no. God, Jesus.
I mean, that reaction is exactly how
Stadium Country should. Yeah, the Stadium Country should get that reaction from people. And so, like, he made that pop country thing in the first place, and he, like, there's nothing in this, like, actual, like, pop rock record that feels exciting compared to even that. Like, I'm not even a huge fan of that Garth Brooks, but, like, I would rather the thunder be rolling than this. Like, the lyrics are uninspired.
Is this reverse Darius Rucker? Sorry.
This is, but I would take Darius Rucker.
It seems like Darius Rucker's country career has been pretty well received, hasn't it?
Yeah, no. Darius Rucker is Darius Rucker has interest.
Yeah. That's the thing. Hootie and the Blowfish was always a stone's throw away from country anyways. Like, Darius Rucker's voice was always right there.
There were not a lot of people with that amount of melanin making country music, but there were totally, it was digestible to the 90s pop crowd. Thank you, Darius Rucker, for surviving longer than the guy from The Counting Crows. and Chris Gaines.
Yes.
That was a commercial.
Yes.
It was a great commercial. It was great. I hope Darius Rucker does more than Chris bring Darius Rucker on here at some point. Oh man, there's an album we should do. But I will say this. The album was bland, the album was boring. We've gone on tangents about Hootie and the Blowfish to not talk about this record. I will say this. As an experiment, as like a thought experiment of like, hey, we're going to put together this movie that we're going to have Garth Brooks star in, so we're going to put out this record before it to try to drum up hype. And then this is what comes out of it. I think is hilarious and I love it. They created this persona out of nothing. And the whole album is supposed to be like different parts of like Chris Gaines's career or whatever. And that never came through, really.
It all sounds the same.
Like 90s pop like music.
It all sounds like 1998 and 1999.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Again, the idea of what you're trying to package up, the experiment of it, the weirdness of it, that album cover, that's, where is it? Right there?
Here,
hilarious.
I'm too blown out. I can't blue steel like Chris Gaines with his glue on soul patch.
Right. Like that looked hilarious. Like, and I love it for that. I just wish the music was as good as
his the wig?
Experiment. Yeah.
The vision.
Garth is bald as a motherfucker.
Yeah. The vision is solid. The execution is not.
Not so much.
Yeah, let's talk about it, David. What? How would you describe this album musically?
Limp. I would use the word limp.
Yo, that shit is limp.
Yeah, Limp Bizkit is more remarkable than this.
Let's see. How would I describe this?
Remarkable, yes.
Okay, guys. I thought this was supposed to be a 90s alt rock. But I thought, but it turns out that it sounds like Garth and the entire project, they really didn't know what they wanted to do. Did they want to do an album that sounded like The Wallflowers? Did they want to do an album that sounded like Harry Connick Jr.?
The Wallflowers song.
Yes.
Oh, well, okay.
We'll talk about it in the film.
It isn't, but it is.
Yeah, okay, yeah, we'll talk about it when we talk about the tracks, but go on.
But yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah.
Like, was it The Wallflowers? Was it Harry Connick Jr.? Did Garth call Kenneth Edmonds, a.k.a. Babyface, to help him out with a few songs on this? This is remotely late 90s alt-rock. It's even close. And... yeah, I think that there might have been, for a second, I thought it was an actual Beatles cover, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
And just very lifeless and very limp is how I would say.
Yeah. This is, like I said, what if Garth Brooks was even blander? Like, it was just 1999 as fuck. In many ways, but definitely not alternative rock. This was
adult contemporary.
Adult contemporary
alternative rock. To rock.
Yes. This is the modern adult contemporary of the late 90s. This is like the Verve pipe or Verve, whatever, the ones that did Freshman. This is like Matchbox 20, but the bland stuff. Like, this is like the boring.
This album would have fit right along on the radio right after Sonny Came Home, Sean Colvin.
This is like I'm hanging out in a JCPenney.
Yeah. But let's talk about some key tracks, including that Wallflowers song.
Key.
What would be some of the key tracks?
For the highlights.
Well, I mean, we might as well talk about Unsigned Letter because, like, we're talking about that. It's like the Wallflowers song. You expect Godzilla to be walking around the background.
It's literally like, one headlight. I literally sang the chorus to One Headlight along with the chorus of the song.
I went to the album credits for this, and I was certain it would have Jacob Dylan involved. I was certain of it.
Yeah.
Another thing you can kind of tell is a lot of these songs are kind of country music progressions, but that kind of country music. Like, there are a lot of, like, nothing in this album is the first time you've heard anything done in this album. Like, including in Way of the Girl, the synths that came out of a Sega Saturn, because holy crap, and probably the worst overdrive tone I've heard in a long time. Also, Garth was doing the I'm exhausted and making these vocals come out of my mouth is making me breathless, you know, kind of thing. And that's always great. Lost in You was the hot chart-topping single off of this album. And nothing says rock and roll persona like a baby making track. I swear
Kenneth Edmonds made this song. This is a 1998 R&B song that they let Garth Brooks borrow. I'm certain of it.
Well, every time I take Petey to Gen Con, we drive down the Kenneth Babyface. Is it Edmonds? Is
that Edmonds?
I went through the through his memorial or his highway. So, like, I hope that he is not to blame for that because, man, Babyface, man. And Snow in July. Who wants an organ funk or like a band that everybody's old uncle would like sort of nod his head and be like, man, this local band sure knows how to play. and the most subtle wah guitar solo that I've ever heard. But you get like a sexy bass line. Like a really, really nice funky one with big voice Garth on it. Like, it's kind of a thing that I, you know, if you want to hear Garth belt it out, quote unquote, it's kind of fun, man. Like, we could go through every single song and be like, they made this. This was what they made. Yes. But yeah.
Drew, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
So that's the way I remember it. It's not the way I remember it, but there's nothing to it. Like, there's nothing to it. It's jangly guitar and a light drum. Like, there's, like, it
and
felt
percussion.
Like this. Yeah, this is the dude that, like, as I've said multiple times, he's the dude that invented, like, the stadium country music idea. Like, it's this guy, and this is the like this. Like, imagine this in a stadium. Like, you can't. Like, it doesn't work.
A countryman microphone. Yeah. He's the countryman.
He is the countryman. Main Street. Main Street was the song where I almost thought, I was like, oh, Garth Brooks trying to do rock music. This is what it's going to sound like. That was the one time. I was like, oh, now it kind of makes sense. It's a bit rock and roll. It's got that bit of twang to his voice. Like, if I had to pick out one song where I was like, ah, it wasn't too bad.
Did you think he was Australian?
No.
At any point?
Okay. At no point. I didn't know.
He was supposed to be Australian?
Chris Gaines is Australian.
Jesus Christ.
Big ups to Trisha Yearwood, because Main Street is the one song she's credited on. Yes. So she's the one variable. Everything else is a Wayne Kirkpatrick, somebody else joint, but that one has Trisha Yearwood on it, and like she brings the one goodness. So
and,
big ups to her.
I'm gonna have everybody do a thought experiment. If you want to see how like disjointed and weird this album is, and how much it doesn't make sense, listen to track one. That's the way I remember it. And then listen to track 13. Sure. My Love Tells Me So. And tell me it's not the most ridiculous dichotomy of songs on the planet. Like, why was there like a weird, like half swing, like song to it with like horns and stuff?
For a minute, I thought the 13th song, My Love Tells Me, I thought that was like a Paul McCartney cover song or something.
Yeah. I thought it was an accident.
Yeah.
Like we had to get this album in a weird way because, like Brett said, it's impossible to find legitimately, right?
And I was like, you can find it, but yeah, not new.
Did Brett send us a wrong zip file? Like, is this really the last song? And I looked it up, and sure enough, and it's like, what? Like, there was horns and
bad horns.
Yes,
the actual hell happened.
I got a bad batch from my Chris Gaines dealer.
Yeah,
that I was sharing to you guys illicitly. Yeah,
this is a bad
trafficking
trip.
And bad. Yeah.
This is a bad trip, all right.
Don't take the brown Chris Gaines.
Yeah.
Stay off the Gaines.
Yes. Thank you, Stephen.
All right, Mr. Smith. David, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
Well, first of all, PD Rave, let me be very, very clear. When I used the word limp, I meant that this entire album is pretty much lifeless, with the exception of a couple of seconds, and I literally mean a couple of seconds, on the song Way of the Girl. Because this song seemed to be the first and only song where Garth and whoever he was making this album with realized, you know what would be a good idea? Maybe we should add some distorted guitars. Maybe we should try and, you know, rock a little. Maybe we should try and rock, you know, have some distortion. Maybe a guitar solo, maybe. I don't know. And then it fades out. So it doesn't even get that far. Again, Unsigned Letter is a Wallflower song, period. And Digging for Gold, that is the one song on this album where the recitative is just kind of limp and forgettable. Digging for Gold is the one that I just felt was actively bad. Like, is this a country song? Is he trying to do Herrick Connick Jr. again? And I just found the transition from the bridge to the chorus just awful. Digging for Gold was just blech.
Chris ain't saying she's a gold digger.
But she ain't messing with no broke Australian.
Yeah.
Also, I would like to point out, I would like to point out, I think when we do mention the Wallflowers, I would like to point out, it's a bad version of the Wallflower.
Oh yeah, no, it's and not good.
Wait.
It's
like when did Godzilla come out? Because
I don't know.
That song has to. They were probably contemporary.
Like, it was like or Heroes.
Heroes was the one from Godzilla. Sorry.
The one I'm thinking about is One Headlight. The one about suicide.
Yes, that is the one I'm thinking about, too.
Which was an interesting song. I just sing a karaoke.
Godzilla walking across.
Yeah, the Wallflowers weren't bad. This was a bad version of that. Let's just put that on Front Street real quick. Yes.
It's a formula. Okay, yeah. It was released in 96. So, it was Jacob Dylan.
Yeah, I want to see. So, like a couple other tracks. So, we talk about Snow in July. I want to talk about, like, I had my notes, and I wanted to say, like,
I will say, Lost in You is the baby making song, which I guess is supposed to be for the Australian alt rock artist.
Natalie Imbruglia.
I will say, so I had this note for Snow in July. Then I noticed the same thing happened and drifted away. Then I noticed it was an ongoing thing throughout the album. And I'm not sure if it was in the last couple of songs because I didn't listen to those all through. Because at that point, once I got to track 12 and track 13, I was like, all right, I got this one. All right, I got this one. I'm done with the record. I may have only listened to this album once, but that's all you need. they took forever to just finally fade away. I noticed it in the freaking Snow in July drifting. I don't know if y'all notice it, but the fade out, it seemed like they were fading out, and then they had the their finger on the fade out, you know, thing. We're bringing it down, then stopped, and just stayed there, and then like seconds later, it finally faded out, and that bothered me, and I don't know why. Did y'all notice that?
Yes. They almost, and it's it, they like they jam that they dunk that fader Like it is abrupt. Almost like you expect Buckner and Garcia to come tell you to do the Donkey Kong one last time.
Yeah.
Like that was abrupt.
Yeah. It's like it stays faded out for a little bit, but never goes away, and then it just goes away. It's like instead of being like a steady fade out, which I get, when you can't figure out how to end a song, you just fade out, but that's fine.
Fade it out.
But like, just fade out. Don't like
a soft fade, folks.
I mean, that's about the end of when they were doing that in albums anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a radio thing. That's weird.
Yeah. That being said, right now, the song that they basically just took the chorus to, the freaking, get together and then just talked about things and what if it's this, that, or the other thing that's like, did this talk about things that happen in the world and it's supposed to be this deep song? It's like this parody, almost like a movie. And I think the pretty much what I put is movie parody of woke rock. Like, there's a movie parody of like this woke song that, or this protest song. Like, it's almost
who was
like
protesting in 1998? And don't nothing. Say Rage Against the Machine.
Ralph Nader.
Nobody. That's the point.
Don't say Rage Against the Machine.
Nobody. That's what and neither was Chris Gaines, because there was nothing said in this song. What if it's a thing? What if it's this? And what if it's that? And I'm like, what is it? What are you saying? It's like he just says things and then like things get together.
What is it?
It's it. We reviewed that album, didn't we?
Maybe. Or one before it. Yeah, it's an album. All right, let's talk about the conclusive thoughts. Let's bring it back around the horn. Drew, what would be your conclusion on this album as a whole?
It's amazing how forgetful it all is. It's something that, like, I want other people to hear it just to see if I'm nuts. Because, like, I had to go back through, like, three different times going, wait, what was the song I wanted to point out for the three songs I was going to talk about? Like, I couldn't even remember that much about this record. That's how forgettable everything is. It's the weirdest, like, it's already gone. Like, most of it is already out of my head. I've listened to it multiple times, and I couldn't, like, it's so weird. It's just I don't know. Like, I want other people to hear it just because it's so awful.
Yes. Yes. Deej, how what would be your conclusion on this album as a whole?
Brett, I want to thank you for bringing this album to the Record Breakers podcast. I really appreciate it. Thank you very, very much. I expected something offensively, hilariously bad, but what I got was something that was just kind of lifeless and forgettable. Imagine a well-accomplished, well-respected actor of stage and screen, and they're later in their career, and they decide to do a few movies that are like really bad comedies, but you know that they'll do well on the box office. That actor is going to guarantee themselves a pretty good payday.
The Love Guru, Cat in the Hat.
That's what this album is. This is the music equivalent of an accomplished actor phoning in a role in a bad comedy because they know they will get a good paycheck from it.
The Bill Murray Garfield movie. Yeah. Actually, he signed up for that because it was a Cohen, but not one of those Cohens, and he didn't read. But yeah,
this is a
Garth clearly didn't read his contract.
This is a bland, forgettable late '90s movie soundtrack that should have just, if it wasn't going to be released as a movie, should have not been released. It's
Greatest Hits or The Cutting Room Floor, starring Chris Gaines.
Exactly. But yeah, Brett, how would you conclude on this album?
I mean, this album is hardly impressive, and I almost feel bad for making you guys listen to it. I learned a lot because if I had known this, we would have not have done this experiment. Like, I hadn't even found the album because as a guy who digs through, like, used CDs every now and then, this album lives there. That's the only place it lives, and it lives there by the millions. I figured this is a way for us to listen to an album, to see like that there was a world in our lifetime where this was a thing. But I probably could have done that experiment on my own and saved everybody from listening to it.
I honestly don't even mind, Brett. I don't mind.
What if we lived in a world where Chris Gaines is still hanging around? Like
every once in a while, Garth feels like, I'm gonna go do Chris Gaines for a bit.
Yeah, and he's like, she's on SNL all the time, being Garth about things.
Guys,
what if it were an SNL episode where it was Garth and Donald Glover, and eventually Childish Gambino and Chris Gaines did like a song or an album together?
That would
where Chris Gaines talks about his childhood a bunch.
Yes. Don't make Donald Glover's music bad. By adding Chris Gaines,
I mean nothing like two guys named Donald and Garth to bring us everything that we need.
That would be.
Apparently, Metallica is going to do music with Lady Gaga. By the way, and I think it's something that we're going to have to listen to. Speaking of weird crossovers,
I'll bring that one happily.
As long as it can't be worse than Lulu.
I mean, it can't be worse.
It can't be worse than Luke. Should know.
Yeah. All right. That being said, those are our thoughts. Not Hulk on Chris rules. Gaines.
The Chris Gaines review. It's not Hulk rules.
Yeah.
But it's about as close as we've gotten.
God, it made Dylan feel interesting.
I think I like this less than Glassjaw.
At least Glassjaw. Okay. Glassjaw was. Remarkable in its abrasiveness.
That was the right album for the wrong group of people. This is just a bad album. Like,
yeah, there's no group of people for this.
Yeah, like this Glassjaw is perfect for.
Can you even listen to this? Like, ironically, can you even riff on this? Ironically, just such a nothing album.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
All right. Let's get down to the nitty gritty. Let's get down to the main event of the evening with our haiku reviews. Let's get down to it.
Freak Drew. Out.
Drew, what is your haiku?
So chic.
Collecting the hits. Can't believe I'm saying this. I'd rather have Garth.
Yeah. David, what is your haiku?
It's not offensive. It's really limp, blue-eyed soul. What was Garth thinking?
Yeah. My haiku. Neither rocks nor rolls. Belongs firmly in its time. Fade out already. Brett, what is your haiku?
There will come a day. Soul patches will come back. Chris will come back too.
Yes. I thought you were gonna say there will come a day where youth will pass.
Do a collab with Childish Gambino.
What will they say about me?
Heard it here first.
That's right. At the Tender Chris Bacon Cheddar Ranch.
Yes. Now that's
my Tender Chris Bacon Cheddar Ranch.
That's a musical masterpiece right there.
Shout out to Darius Rucker.
And French fry. He rhymed French fry potatoes, I think. Yeah. I don't know all the lyrics, but yeah. We haven't heard French fry potatoes being in a song since Cheeseburger in Paradise.
I have that song on my computer because I have the entirety of I have volumes 1 through 16 of the YTMND soundtrack.
Oh my God, that means I have it too, actually.
Yes.
I just realized I have all the YTMNDs as well.
Yes.
Belly starts a rumbling and I'm jonesing for
it's right
a
up
treat.
There. I think it's on the same album as that. I think it's on volume one.
It's on volume one. Tender Crisp Bacon Cheddar Ranch.
Tender Crisp Bacon Cheddar Ranch.
The breasts they grow on trees. Of bacon ranch dressing flow right up to your knees.
Yeah, it's on right there on volume one, which starts off with the intro and then starts off with Tubin Burgers Straight Ahead, Eric Prydz Call on Me, Snoop Dogg's Drop It Like It's Hot, Baltimore's Tarzan Boy, The Simpsons A Fish Called
Selma. Oh my God,
Selma.
Tarzan Boy.
Heather Dale, This Endless Night, Darius Rucker, Tender Crisp Bacon Ranch, Ozone's Dragostea Dinte, a.k.a. Numa Numa, Muhammad Hassan's entrance theme.
God, why?
That was a YTMND thing. That was
YTMND was a weird place, Deej.
That was the early days of internet memery.
And that's weirder than my Salty Bet mix.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It was weirdness. But yeah, now again, we're going on these tangents about YTMND and Darius Rucker because this album was so boring. But this album is not going to be on our Spotify playlist.
Fuck no. And you aren't getting the doc that I shared.
Yeah.
Honestly, find it on your own or don't.
Trust us on this one.
I'll get it to you. If you want it, I'll get it to you. I'll get you that illicit Chris game.
You do not get paid to do the home game.
Stay off the games.
But we'll be on that Spotify playlist. We'll be next week's record, and that's provided by Drew. Drew, what do you got for us next week?
I'm going to bring in my opinion, possibly the best guitarist to ever make a record.
Raffy.
He's a man I'm a big fan of. And not going to do a live album like Brett wanted, but we're going to play, we're going to listen to some Stevie Ray Vaughan with a fourth studio album In Step.
Yeah.
Good choice. Get your cocaine, your clown costume out.
Good choice.
Wow, 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 wow.
Drew, I want to say thank you for tossing us another softball.
Yeah.
I figured we did an awful record. Might as well get a good one out of the way.
Really fantastic. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to talk about this one. But that'll be next week. And this is this week. And you can, of course, find us all over the internet. David is at Call Me DJM. Brett is at Hey Beauty Beer Bird, HIBBITYBIBBARD. Drew is at XJucifrX. I'm at PD Rave. The show is at 4 Record Breakers. That's the number 4 Record Breakers. RecordBreakersPodcast.com. RecordBreakersPodcast@gmail.com is the email. Rebelly.net for this on other shows. Rebelly TV on YouTube for the funds.
Like, share, subscribe.
Sometimes it's fun to check out the YouTube because I do special stuff on the YouTube sometimes in the edit because it's fun. So be sure to check it out. Do all the things. Share, subscribe, review, feedback. Let us know what you think. Until next time, hasta los huevos.
This is me doing the chair floss. Toodaloo.
Please, Garth, don't send your hired goons after us for bringing this out back into existence.
Garth Vader. Thank you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.